ॐ जनतमनन्दस्य चक्षुसमलतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन मुदिरति सायं रूपकदामयं ददति सापन्नतिकम् प्रपच्चित्र कोटै Tubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. We read yesterday the invitation by Nanda Maharaj to Gaugacharya, Gauga Muni, the great spiritual teacher and Brahmin and great Jyotish Acharya, means the astrological expert teacher. So he asked, Nanda Maharaj asked this great person who Krishna's actual father, Vasudeva, had sent to Gokul, inspired to go there. He asked him to perform the Namakarana ceremony, or the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram. And Gauga Muni replied, he was very, very respectful to Gaugacharya. Even though there is no one in a higher position, practically speaking, than Nanda Maharaj, still he was very respectful to this great teacher. So Gauga Muni replied, saying, "My dear Nanda Maharaj, I am the priestly guide of the Yadu dynasty. This is known everywhere. Therefore, if I perform the purificatory process for your sons, Kamsa will consider them the sons of Devapati." So Gauga Muni, maybe you can make this a bit loud. Gauga Muni was speaking very practically. Yes, I can do this, but it is very dangerous. This text and the next text will explain the danger. I'll read both of them right now. Kamsa is both a great diplomat and a very sinful man. Therefore, having heard from Yogamaya, the daughter of Devaki, that the child who will kill him has already been born somewhere else, and having heard that the eighth pregnancy of Devaki could not bring forth a female child, and having understood your friendship with Vasudev, Kamsa, upon hearing that the purificatory process has been performed by me, the priest of the Yadu dynasty, he's going to conclude that actually this boy Krishna, he is actually the eighth son of Vasudev, being whisked away somehow or another to be hidden as the son of Nanda Maharaj. He may certainly consider all these points and suspect that Krishna is the son of Devaki and Vasudev. Then he might take steps to kill Krishna. That would be a catastrophe. Just see how this drama is being set up, and it's been going on actually, a drama to increase the different varieties of ecstasies that are experienced by Krishna's great devotees, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda and all the other residents of Vrindavan. Because there has to be some action. The impersonalist say that the Supreme is Brahman and it is Nirgun, qualityless. And for something to possess no qualities means that it doesn't possess the quality of misery, which everyone is looking for, to avoid the quality of misery. But also, although that occurs, that one who merges himself or becomes one with the great supreme energy, this Brahman that has no misery, but it also has no ecstasy. If it has no qualities, not only does it have misery, it doesn't have ecstasy. And an ecstasy-less, and it doesn't have love. It just is a cessation, basically, of all material conceptualization. This is what this Brahman realization is, the realization of Brahma. The realization where one can lose one's individuality and lose one's different feeling of differentiation from the Supreme. Loses one's misery, but it also loses out the opportunity to serve Krishna, and therefore one loses out one's ecstasy. So in the soul naturally longs for this, it longs for relationship. And you can see in the contemporary culture, all the different philosophies that proclaim that we are none different from the Supreme, and that we have to awaken our sense of none difference from the Supreme, and or even the greatest teachers of these things, of these philosophies, they always have girlfriends or a girlfriend. Or not always, but very often, especially when they have, at least when they have some connection with the Advaita Vedanta or Advaita Gyan, at least there's a tendency for them not to be engaged in illicit activities under the name of, oh, it's all a game, it's all an illusion, so it doesn't make any difference. As Prabhupada explains in the one purport in the Bhagavad Gita, although they say that the material world is an illusion, still they are very expert at enjoying that illusion. In other words, Prabhupada is pointing out the hypocrisy of it. Or as I once approached one person who was smoking a cigarette, and he was proclaiming that that everything is illusion and everyone is no different from the Supreme and that he's not his body. And I approached him and said, "You're smoking a cigarette." And he said, "I'm not smoking. I'm eternal. I'm a soul. It's my body that's smoking. It doesn't have anything to do with me. All the rest is illusion." If I was a little bit more bold, I probably would have a left hook or a right cross and said, "I didn't do that. My body did it. What's the problem? Can you hit me?" "No, I didn't. First of all, I'm not my body. How could I hit you? And what to speak of, you're not your body." Such hypocrisy, actually. And that type of hypocrisy entangles one so tightly in the material world, in bodily consciousness, and especially when they commit inappropriate, sinful activities in the name of, oh, it's all a game, it's all a play, it's all a game. Because this occurs because, actually speaking, they are not feeling satisfied within their own realizations. And sometimes if they're very, very advanced, they can experience, by quelling the mind, and they can experience something of the happiness of the cessation of material miseries. But it isn't, they cannot stay in that, because the soul by nature is active. And it longs for relationships. It longs for relationships. So it behooves everyone to awaken his relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, one will be forced into the attempt to enjoy in the material world and awaken up materialistic relationships that will simply entangle one. So, in the topmost understanding of the soul in spiritual life is when he has awakened his relationship with the Supreme Soul. He understands that he is Brahma. Brahma means the greatest, actually, or spiritual, Aham Brahmasmi. But he also awakens his relationship with the Param Brahma, the Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Param Dhamma, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. This is Krishna. So here, the activities of Krishna with those perfected souls who have awakened their relationship with Krishna on the spiritual level, they're being described. And Nanda Maharaj, one of these topmost devotees who loves Krishna in the mood of a father loving his son, is asking this great sage, Gauga Muni, to give him his names according to the astrological science, and simultaneously give some foretelling possibly of the future for this boy, Krishna, and Balaram. And Gauga Muni is replying, because when everything goes on in the spiritual world, again, it is simply meant to increase the ecstasies of the devotees. So there is, for there to be activity, there has to be always some tension. So there is tension even in this simple name-giving ceremony. Krishna is asking Gauga Muni to perform, and he says, I'd like to, but yet I fear if the priest, the head priest of the Yadav dynasty, performs this for your child, Kamsa, who is trying to kill this boy, he may put together the pieces and consider that this boy, Krishna, is actually a Yadu. He is actually the son of Vasudeva, and then try to kill him. That would be a disaster, catastrophe. Prabhupada's purport. Kamsa knew very well that Yogamaya was, after all, the maidservant. This is up to 8 and 9. The maidservant of Krishna and Vishnu, and that although Yogamaya had appeared as the daughter of Devaki, she might have been forbidden to disclose this fact. Actually, this is what had happened. Gauga Muni argued very soberly that his taking part in performing the reformatory process for Krishna would give rise to many doubts, so that Kamsa may take very severe steps to kill the child. Kamsa had already sent many demons to attempt to kill this child, but none of them had survived. If Gauga Muni were to perform the purificatory process, Kamsa's suspicion would be fully confirmed. And he would take very severe steps. Gauga Muni gave this warning to Nanda Maharaj. So therefore there was tension. And therefore fear arose in the heart of Nanda Maharaj. But this fear was based on his loving relationship with Krishna. It was pure. It was faultless. It was selfless. It was unselfish. It was based on love, the perfection of the soul's consciousness, love for Krishna. Krishnendriya priti. It was meant for the satisfaction of Krishna. And therefore, this fear, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, this is a sanchari bhava, or a vyavachari bhava, or a sub-ecstasy. Like a smaller wave in the ocean of ecstasy, a variety of ecstasy, fear based on love for the beloved. This is how ecstasy is expressed, or one of the expressions of the of ecstasy of love for Krishna. We'll read this portion of Chakravarti Thakura's comment. Text 8 and 9. Gauga Muni continued, everyone will think this, especially Kamsa will pursue this matter that Krishna is actually the son of Vasudeva. Nanda Maharaj replied, but will Kamsa, being a Brahmavadi, actually kill you? Gauga Muni, yes, because Kamsa is a sinful person. He will kill people like us. He will certainly do it because he has already committed violence against your friend Vasudeva. He will do the same to you. His demonic intelligence will begin to act. When Kamsa heard the words of Devaki's daughter, he thought, what were the words of Devaki's daughter? That Kamsa, you're a rascal, don't try and kill me. The child who was meant to kill you has already been born somewhere else. He thought, it is not possible that the eighth child of Devaki is a girl. My enemy Vishnu has certainly been born to Devaki, but by the arrangement of Vasudeva, he was taken away to the house of his friend Nanda. He'll put the pieces together. As they say in contemporary slang, he will connect the dots. That's what they say nowadays. And therefore he will understand that this child is actually Vasudeva's child. This boy Krishna is meant to kill me. And then he will immediately make a plot to kill Krishna. My worshipable deity Durga, he's again telling the thoughts of Kamsa, who has taken the role of Devaki's daughter, said that he who will kill me has already taken birth somewhere, having ambiguously stated that Vishnu was not born to Devaki, but somewhere else. Durga has hinted to me that I should search everywhere and quickly kill him. So Nanda Maharaj, when he's hearing this, immediately, oh, my beloved Krishna will be killed. Immediately, love causes fear in his heart. Oh, fearing for his beloved Krishna. What? How can I live without Krishna? Ecstasy is born or takes a different shape. At one moment he's thinking, oh, my son, I want to get him named by God's grace. Gauga Muni has come. Let him perform the name-giving ceremony. One type of ecstasy based on love, bringing such happiness to Nanda Maharaj. Then fear. Oh, Kamsa may learn of Krishna's birth and try and kill him. Based on love, another type of ecstasy. So this is the nature of the spiritual world. It is not static and same, but it is ecstatic and always changing, but always based on Krishna, always based on love for Krishna. Practically speaking, all we can do to understand this is understand that the relationships that have brought us the most pleasure in this world, the most love, that give us the most love, we can take that and multiply that times a billion, and then multiply that billion times 100 billion, and we may glimpse something about the ecstatic loving emotion that Nanda Maharaj is experiencing in his relationship with Krishna, based on some fear. So in other words, practically speaking, we cannot truly understand this unless we are on a very exalted level. But we can get a glimpse of what it's like by taking the happinesses of the material world and multiplying them by hundreds and thousands and millions. While thinking, we'll complete the purport here by Vishwanath. While thinking in this way and engrossed in looking for his enemy Kamsa, upon hearing about my performance of the Namakaran, he may conclude that Vasudev's son is in Nanda's house and he will come here to kill the child, then this will be a great fault on my part. Just imagine if a relationship in this world can be, of course the relationships in this world are very often a cause of so much suffering, or we have so much hopes for untold happiness, but usually or very often they end up causing us so much suffering. But in Krishna, when the relationship is fixed in Krishna, then the result is ecstasy. And the fault in the material world is we try to do to find our happiness away from Krishna, separate from Krishna, with ourselves as the center. So Garga Muni is thinking, if something would happen to this wonderful child because of something I've done, perform the ceremony, this would be a great fault on my part. Again, if something would happen to this child, it would be a fault on my part. So he doesn't want to do it. Nanda Maharaj replies, this is text 10, "My dear sage, if you think that you're performing this process of purification, this is called the sanskaras, or the purificatory processes, will make Kamsa suspicious, then secretly chant the Vedic hymns and perform the purifying process of second birth here in the cow shed of my house in secret, so that Kamsa will never know. Without the knowledge of anyone else, even my relatives, for this process of purification is essential." Just see what Krishna has arranged. Something very, very humble, first of all. Well, not exactly Krishna, but Krishna's energy that serves him. Something very, very humble, and also very, very, very secret. When there is a loving exchange, and it is done very, very secretly, even though the tendency may want to broadcast it everywhere, there is something very special and intimate when something done with deep love is shared only between one or two people, and it's very, very secret. That intimacy is another variety of in the ecstasy in the relationship with Krishna. So that is why Krishna has arranged to make something very, very intimate and secret for his name-giving ceremony. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport, and then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has some comment, I believe. No, we don't have... Yes, we have one for this. "To take advantage of Garga Muni's presence," this is Srila Prabhupada, half of Prabhupada's purport, "Nanda Maharaj wanted to perform the Namakarana ceremony even secretly, without any gorgeous arrangements. Therefore, the opportunity for purification should be regarded as an essential duty of human society. In Kali Yuga, however, people have forgotten the essence, what life's purpose is, etc. Manda sumanda mateo manda bhagya yubha drutaha." So there is no question in Kali Yuga, generally speaking, of performing purificatory ceremonies, because there is nothing to become purified for. The concept of getting purified. What does purification mean? One way to define it would be to... to cleanse, yes. And what does to clean mean? The negative definition of to clean.
Removing
dirt. To clean, to remove dirt. So purificatory ceremonies are meant to remove the coverings over the heart, so that the natural purity and natural consciousness of the soul can shine forward. But who today thinks like this? Who thinks in terms of purifying the heart? Rather, people don't have any conception of that, and rather they add more and more contaminations upon the heart, because there's no concept of what a pure heart is. So people's sense of enjoyment is generally things that add more and more layers of coverings to the heart. What to speak of thinking of purifying the heart? So Prabhupada is explaining that there is a ceremony done, as called the Namakarana, the name-giving ceremony, that's purpose is to give an impression, a purifying impression, in a very young child's heart. But in Kali Yuga, people have forgotten the essence. The essence, Prabhupada means, the purpose of life is purification. To gain something spiritual. Not just to engage in sensuous enjoyments that in the beginning bring happiness, but in the end bring untold miseries and diseases and horrors to the consciousness and disturb the consciousness. So manda samanda matayo manda abhagya upadrutaha. In this age, people are all bad and unfortunate. They do not accept the Vedic instructions to make their life successful. Who even thinks in terms of a purpose of life? People think that the purpose of life is to enjoy, and to enjoy, I need to make money. So the purpose of life is economics. But who is happy in the midst of all this? How much money would it take before a man will feel satisfied and secure? It's unlimited. The people who have $500,000 tucked away, they're not feeling, oh, that's sufficient for my life. I don't have to, I have nothing to worry about anymore. Rather, they're in more anxiety. What happens if I lose this? What happens if my investments fall apart? What happens if this? What happens if that? What happens if someone gets sick and they have to go into the hospital and that will cost $300,000 to get the operation? And then what happens if, or what happens if? How much money would it take so one feels secure enough, so one thinks, now I have enough, and now I'm satisfied, and now I'm happy? So people don't understand the spiritual, the Vedic instructions to make their life successful. Nanda Maharaj, Prabhupada continues, however, did not want to neglect anything. To keep intact a happy society, advanced in spiritual knowledge, he took advantage of Gauga Muni's presence to do what was necessary. How degraded society has become within 5,000 years. Manda samanda mateo manda abhagya. This human life is attained after many millions of births, and it is intended for purification. Previously, because one's happiness actually comes from subtlety of consciousness. The grosser one's consciousness is, the less one has the ability to enjoy himself. The less pleasure is in activities. Not that he doesn't try for pleasure, but when one tries for happiness on a very gross level, rather than it producing happiness in the heart, it produces dissatisfaction in the heart. And we can see that in contemporary society, the tendencies or the processes that people use for their happiness become grosser and grosser and grosser and grosser. And therefore people become more miserable, in fact. So previously a father was eager to give all kinds of help to elevate his children, but at present, because of being misguided, people are prepared even to kill to avoid the responsibility of raising children. Sukadev Goswami continued, having been thus having then been especially requested by Nanda Maharaj to do that which he had already desired to do, Gauga Muni performed the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram in a solitary place. So in the next text, there is one verse dedicated to what Gauga Muni says about Lord Balaram. He says, after he chants so many mantras, to purify the atmosphere, to make the atmosphere very auspicious and very, very subtle. And then he, using his methodology, astrological methodology, he gives the child a name, or he actually gives him three names. What are the three names he gives this boy? We usually call him Balaram, but his one name is Bala, one name is Rama, and the other is Shankarshan. Three names. This child, the son of Rohini, he says, will give all happiness to his relatives and friends by his transcendental qualities. When a child has transcendental qualities, he is the source. Because transcendental qualities are at least in the mode of goodness, peacefulness. Every quality that is described as suitable, that cause happiness, gentility, cleanliness, etc. So he will possess transcendental qualities, and therefore he will give all happiness to his relatives and his friends. Therefore, because he will give happiness, he will be known as Rama. Rama literally means giver of pleasure. And because he will manifest extraordinary strength, he will be also known as Bala, because Bala means strength. Moreover, because he unites two families, Vasudeva's family and the family of Nanda Maharaj, he will be known as Shankarshan. Shankarshan means connecting, uniting, attracting. Purport. Baladev was actually the son of Devaki, but he was transferred from Devaki's womb to that of Rohini. This fact was not disclosed, according to a statement in the Harivamsa, the Sanskrit text. Gaugamuni did disclose to Nanda Maharaj that Balaram would be known as Shankarshan because of his uniting two families, the Yadu Vamsa and the Vamsa, a family of Nanda Maharaj, one of which was known as Kshatriyas and the others as Vaishyas, warriors, administrators, and others as mercantile people. Both families had the same original forefather, the only difference being that Nanda Maharaj was born of a mercantile Vaishya wife, whereas Vasudeva was born of a Kshatriya wife. Later, Nanda Maharaj married a Vaishya wife and Vasudeva married a Kshatriya wife. So although the families of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva both came from the same father, they were divided as Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. Now Baladev united them, and therefore he was known as Shankarshan. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport. I'll read a little. This is a quotation from the Harivamsa of Vedic literature, saying, "Amongst all the Yadus, you, Nanda Maharaj, are most dear to me. Gaugamuni did not reveal here that Balaram was transferred, a Karshana, from the womb of Devaki to Rohini, and thus given the name Shankarshan for that reason, because the womb of Rohini attracted him by the power of Yogamaya." That's how Prabhupada explains it in the Krishna book also. Text 13. So this beautiful boy, Krishna, is going to be described in text 13 through 19. Seven verses. In the first verse, he describes basically that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Through his astrological knowledge, he is able to detect the position of Krishna. "Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he has appeared in a blackish color." So he is the one who is appearing. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Krishna, Stu Bhagavan Sayam, Ete Changsa Kalapungsan, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam. That Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the source of all incarnations. He is the avatari. He is the source of all avatars. And when he descends in different forms, which include different colors. And these display different aspects of his full potency, of his full nature, which he displays only as Krishna. So he has assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow, and now he has appeared in a blackish color. In another Dwapara Yuga, he appeared as Lord Ramachandra in the color of Sukha, a parrot. All of such incarnations have now assembled in Krishna. We'll read. There's quite long, lengthy purports here that describe Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada gives a long purport, and Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives a still longer purport. We won't read them all. And in both Vishwanatha's purport and Srila Prabhupada's purport, the point will be made that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, because the different colors of the different incarnations are white, red, and yellow. And now Krishna comes in a blackish color, complexion. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur and Prabhupada both explain how that yellow incarnation of Krishna, the Yuga avatar, is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I quote from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam to show this. Is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who comes for the purpose of giving the methodology of purification and of God realization in this age, and that is chanting the names of Krishna congregationally, singing Krishna's name, very uplifting, very auspicious, very purifying to the heart. And it can be done by someone who is most exalted on the highest platform, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited. And he would experience in Krishna's names, as he chanted Krishna's names, he would directly experience Krishna, because Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Pona Shuddha Nitya Mukta Abhina Tvam Nama Namano. That Krishna is actually the same as his name. This is the nature of the absolute platform. That the object, the Nam, and the nomine and the name of the object are both the same. They both have potency. They both have the quality. So the name of Krishna and Krishna the person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are the same. So when one chants Krishna's names, if one is fully pure, a fully pure love of Krishna, lover of Krishna, you will actually experience fully Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he says Krishna's name. And therefore the great devotees in past ages, they would just chant Krishna's names and they would experience the highest ecstasies of association with Krishna just by vibrating that, just by meditating through their vibration. Through chanting Krishna's names, they would meditate on the sound vibration of Krishna and experience Krishna, full presence in that. And one who is not on that level, chanting Krishna's names, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagnilavapanam Shayakarayava Chandrikam Vitaranam Vidyavaru Jivaram Anandam Bhudi Vardhanam Pratipatam Punam Rastam Asvadanam Savatma Snapanam Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. It will cleanse the heart. It will act as medicine to clean the heart of all the contaminations, all the dust sitting above. All the desires sitting above and polluting the natural consciousness that we have. So chanting Krishna's names cleanses that away gradually or quickly, depending upon how serious we chant, or how proficiency in chanting attentively and with affection and offenselessly, the heart will be cleansed. And then Shriya Karayava Chandrika, just like in so many examples are given in that text, Cheto Dharpanam Ajanam, the mirror is cleansed. When one looks at a dirty mirror, if the dust is very thick, one can't see oneself. So the mirror is one's consciousness. Right now, when we try to understand who we are, we can't actually see ourselves because of the thick dust of material contaminations that are covering our consciousness, covering our heart. So chanting cleanses that. So when the mirror is clean, one can look in it and see oneself. When the consciousness is clean, one can perceive one who one actually is when one examines himself. And then Shreya Karayava Chandrika means changing the metaphor. It's by chanting Hare Krishna, it is the Chandrika, or the moonlight, that enables the white lotus of our spiritual life to blossom. As the lotus blossoms in the moonlight, similarly, the moonlight in this analogy is compared to the chanting of Krishna's names, which is pouring itself upon the soul, the consciousness of the soul, and allowing his spiritual identity to blossom gradually. So first, one analogy, it's cleansing, a removing, and the other, it's a blossoming. A removing of that which inhibits the soul's spiritual life from blossoming, and simultaneously a blossoming, a flowering, and a realization of his actual identity in relationship with Krishna. Now we think of our actual identity in relationship with the body only, but we have an eternal relationship with Krishna. So we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. Partially explaining the position of Lord Krishna and partially covering the facts, Gauga Muni indicated, "Your son is a great personality, and he can change the color of his body in different ages. The word grinataha indicates that Krishna is free to make his choice. In other words, he is the supreme personality of Godhead and may therefore do whatever he desires. In Vedic literature, the different colors assumed by the personality of Godhead in different millenniums are stated. And therefore, when Gauga Muni said, 'Your son has assumed these colors,' he indirectly said, he, Krishna, is the supreme personality of Godhead. Because of Kamsa's atrocities, Gauga Muni tried to avoid disclosing this fact, because Kamsa knew that he was going to be killed by Vishnu Krishna. But he indirectly informed Nanda Maharaj that Krishna, his son, was the supreme personality of Godhead. It may be noted that Srila Jiva Goswami, in his book Krama Sandarbha, which is his commentary on the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, has enunciated the purport of this verse. In every millennium, Krishna appears in a different form, either as white, red, or yellow. But this time, he personally appeared in his original blackish form, as predicted by Gauga Muni, exhibited the power of Narayan. Because in this form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead exhibited himself fully. His name is Sri Krishna, the all-attractive. Factually, Krishna is the source of all avatars, and therefore all the different features of the different avatars are present in Krishna. All the avatars, all the different incarnations, join within Krishna's body when he comes. When Krishna incarnates, all the features of all other incarnations are already present within him. Other incarnations are partial representations of Krishna, who is the full-fledged incarnation of the Supreme Being. So we see in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, even though so much preparation has previously been given to prepare us for who this boy is that he's not a boy, an ordinary boy, but he's actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So much preparation has been given, but still, in the 10th canto, it goes back and forth between Leela, some pastimes, some activities of this all-attractive Supreme Person, and then some explanation of some philosophy. Don't forget. It's always saying, don't forget who this boy is. He's playing with his friends, and very soon, in a few verses, we'll hear the kind of activities that he performs with his friends in the village, holding on to the tails of cows, and Krishna was so naughty and is stealing butter. But this is the Supreme Personality of God. Who is doing this out of his free will, just to give ecstasy to his devotees. Very wonderful. So continuously it goes back to remind us, the readers, of who this all-attractive, all-beautiful, all-powerful boy actually is. It is understood that the Supreme Being, whether appearing as Sukla, Rakta, or Pita, white, yellow, or yellow, is the same person. When he appears in different incarnations, he appears in different colors, just like the sunshine, which contains seven colors. Sometimes the color of the sunshine are represented separately, otherwise the sunshine is observed mainly as bright light. The different avatars, such as the Manvantara avatars, Leela avatars, Dasa avatars, are all included in the Krishna avatar. When Krishna appears, all the avatars appear with him as described in the Bhagavatam. And then Prabhupada gives a little bit describing Lord Chaitanya. The 11th canto of the Bhagavatam describes the incarnations for each yuga, each age period, in chronological order. The Bhagavatam says, Krite Sukla Chatur Bahu Tretayam Raktavana Sal Dwapare Bhagavan Shyama Krishna Vanam Trisha Krishnam. We actually see that in Kali Yuga, Bhagavan has appeared in Pitavana, or a yellow color. To adjust these statements, one should understand that although in some yugas some of the colors are prominent, in every yuga when Krishna appears, all the colors are present. Krishna Vanam Twisha Krishna. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared without Krishna or a blackish color, he is understood to be Krishna himself. Idanam Krishna Tam Gata, from this verse, some Sanskrit words, the same original Krishna who appeared in different colors has now appeared. The word asan indicates that he is always present. Whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in his full feature, he is understood to be Krishna Vanam, although he appears in different colors. Prahlad Maharaj states that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is channa, that means covered. That is, although he is Krishna, he is covered by a yellow color. Although he is Krishna, a blackish color, his yellow color colors him. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna, but in the mood of Gaudi, Srimati Radharani, golden color. So that golden effulgence of Srimati Radharani is coloring and covering Krishna's darkish, blackish color. And therefore, he is always in the mood of Srimati Radharani, although he is Krishna himself. So therefore, his ecstasy is very, very extraordinary and very rare. Thus, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas accept the conclusion that although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in a yellow color, pita color, he is Krishna. Krishna Varnam Twisha Krishna Sangopastra Parasadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayaya Janti Sumedasa. So we won't read the rest of Gauga Muni's words now. We'll have a class tomorrow. How many of the devotees won't be able to be here tomorrow because of the festival? Okay, but we'll have class with your permission. Any questions or comments? Yes.
With people to take seats, I don't know if you know this, but a question come out to me. One person said, Prabhupada was talking about Brahman, being a Brahmana or becoming a Brahmana. So someone said that ISKCON is trying to make Brahmanas.
Someone said?
Well,
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada.
So, but then they also say, Krishna consciousness is meant for everybody. And so this person said to me, well, you say you want to make farmers, now again you say you want to make everyone.
Because everyone won't be able to become a Brahmana.
Yes. What
is the purpose of making people into a Brahmanas?
Yeah, are we not trying to make everyone a Brahmana?
Practically speaking, we are not trying to make everyone a Brahmana. But if you say everyone should be a Brahmana, maybe you can make a few. Maybe a few will actually try to become like that and have the capacity as well. Because in Kali Yuga, everything is so difficult. So difficult. Yeah.
In Sankirtan, what is it clear here? It says that the Krishna consciousness movement affords an opportunity to develop the right destiny for human society.
The what?
The right destiny.
For society.
For human society.
So destiny, that Prabhupada means direction. So there, on one part of Krishna consciousness movement and its desires and goals is to establish some direction for society. And to do that, Prabhupada, following Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually, spoke about a re-establishing of a Varnashrama system in some form or another. And a Varnashrama system designates different members of society into different roles so that society could function properly. And in that designation, and the example always given is the body for the Varnashrama society. There's a cooperation between the different parts of the body. The arms are the defending part of the body, and that's like the warriors, the kshatriyas. And the head is the direction giving, and that is the Brahmins. And the belly is the Vaishya, it feeds and supplies agriculture, it supplies the energy. And the legs are the working part, the workers, the sutras who assist the other parts. All are necessary, but without the head being there, the direction given part, what is the destiny of society? Without the head being in proper order means the brahminical part, or the having a spirit giving, offering society a spiritual direction, then society will go either in the belly direction only, the Vaishya money making economic development, or just the warrior direction, or just the sudra direction. So, out of hoping to help society, Prabhupada set up one of the goals was to make ISKCON help generate Brahmins for the whole society. But everyone in ISKCON, as it turns out, couldn't become Brahminically inclined either. So even in ISKCON there are different varieties of persons who take up different functions. But in any case, whatever one's external function is, the other side of ISKCON is this, or the Krishna conscious movement is simply spiritual advancement. So regardless of who one is, what one's capacity is, one's nature is, one should just chant Hare Krishna with a full heart and develop love for Krishna. Is it? Big topic, actually. In the beginning of the movement, Prabhupada just talked about everyone becoming Vaishnavas. He didn't talk about the Varnashrama part, although he made everyone Brahmins, because you have to be a Brahmin to do deity worship, which is required for purification. That's the basic
purpose of the second new Brahmin, what we call Brahminical initiation, Brahmin Diksha, so that one can worship the deity, which is a help for purification. But regardless of one's position, if one can just really namasraya jata, kodi jatana tumi, just take shelter of Krishna's names, then one can be elevated. Any more on this?
Any questions?
Yeah, anyone?
Not following the same.
Yeah.
One thing came to mind that our Rinja Srupa says that, because, like, he says that his realization is Prabhupada got kind of an education in one sense.
By dealing with Westerners,
yeah,
and their capacity.
Yeah. And that he ended up in the, like, towards the end of the Bhagavatam, he's talking more about saying, he says that the Krishna conscious movement is therefore very eager to reintroduce the Maharashtra system in human society.
It's true, and he started talking about it in 1974, but it's in his books prior to that, because it was a desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he saw that Westerners didn't have much capacity for this.
For pure Vaishnavism.
We needed a support system, a culture that supports our Krishna consciousness. Because now the culture, this culture, the Western culture, pulls us down. It doesn't help us. It pulls us down. Everything is geared in this culture for sense enjoyment and sensuality. So it pulls us down. It makes it so hard to be pure. So Prabhupada envisioned setting up communities, Vanashrama communities, where the devotees could get some relief from the Western culture and take a natural position from them, and chant Hare Krishna, be in the association of devotees, and perhaps a little more gradually become purified.
Bhakti Keshmar says that he likens Vaishnavism to walking in tightrope, and
the safety net.
The Vaishnavism is like the
magic. Yeah.
Fall down into culture.
Yeah. Because what really means to be a Vaishnava is surrendered fully. I mean, even transcending one's own nature. The nature born of one's body. So that's very difficult. And one can't have a nature that's always demanding, yes, now you have to do that, now that. You have to be very much in the mode of goodness, which comes from, if one is purely chanting, or if one is already quite pure. Otherwise one can proceed a little more gradually by using one's nature in Krishna's service. Big topic, actually. Okay, it's already late. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Jai Prabhupada Ki Jai.